Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Punk Rock NBA Podcast.
What's up, everybody? I'm Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock NBA Podcast. Today's guest is Brendan Murphy from Counterparts. You know Counterparts, the band that's like half breakdowns, half crying, half sad, with the singer that's funny on Twitter. That singer is Brendan. So I got him on the podcast to kind of talk about how the quarantine is affecting his band, and more importantly, how they make a lot of their business decisions, like how they book tours, like how they forecast how many sizes of shirts to order before they go out, like how do they decide how many of these hoodies to get in Europe versus this many hoodies in Japan or whatever. We get into all the nuances of that stuff, and I think this will be a really interesting look behind the scenes at how bands operate, and the way that a band operates is the same any business operates. We get super deep into all that stuff. I thought it was a super interesting conversation. I could have gone on for another hour, but I wanted to be respectful of his time because we've all got things to do, right? So before I get into the show, first, I wanted to just mention a couple ways that you can support the show if you're interested. Number one, please share it on social media, tag me, tag the guest, tag Deanna. It really helps us spread the word because, as you know, the platforms themselves like Spotify and Apple and stuff don't really do very much in terms of marketing. So if you share it with your friends, that really helps us. Thing number two that you can do if you want is to support the show on Patreon. Patrons get access to their shows a week early. There's an opportunity to have me review your band or podcast or YouTube channel or any other project you want to send my way, as well as some other stuff. There's a link to that in the show notes. And number three, if you really, really, really like the show, you can buy some merch. There is a link to that in the show notes as well. And as always, I want to thank our producer and editor, Deanna Chapman. She is the one that makes all this happen. If you've got a podcast that you want to get off the ground, or maybe you already have a podcast and you want to just do it bigger and better, there's a link to her contact information in the show notes as well. And with that out of the way, let's get into the show.
Good morning, Mr. Brendan Joseph Murphy.
Hello, how are you?
You are reporting live from Canada.
Yeah, from Hamilton, Ontario.
And we are both under quarantine. They just announced earlier today, I think, that they closed the Canadian border, as I was expecting. Do you have anything that got disrupted by this? I know you guys just played some dates. Do you have anything that kind of got screwed up?
Not for Counterparts, no. But for, and I actually, like, it's crazy. Like, they just shut down the border today. And like, I got home from the US like 2 days ago. I'm pretty sure they would have to let me back in. You know what I mean? Like, I might not have been able to fly, but if I were to, like, you know, rent a car or some shit, like, I think they would have to let me back into the country.
Like, oh, we've seen your tweets, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, no, you can stay there.
Yeah.
No, but they, like, we were supposed to play, I think it was like Sunday, like the 15th or something. And was supposed to play New York City at Webster Hall with like Body Count and the Cro-Mags. What's his name? Harley.
Yeah.
Flanagan. That version of the Cro-Mags, right? For anyone who, you know,
gets into that whole beef.
Yeah. If anyone really wants to get involved, it's so funny. Cause like the other guys in End were like talking about that and being like, yeah, I think, I don't know. Like, they're like having an actual, like,
right,
just like discussion of like, which, like, I don't know. Like, I think so-and-so actually like made Chroma and whatever and all this,
like,
shit.
Like, the I'm way people there, talk about, like, who's going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Straight up. And I'm like, I'm sitting there, I'm just sitting in the, like, in the kitchen, just being like, yeah, I like eyeliner breakdown bands. Like, I literally don't know about any of this shit. I'm 28.
Number one used fan.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, yeah, you want to talk about, like, you know, the Used and all that stuff and fucking My Chemical Romance and what I think about the Black Parade versus Sweet Cheers, I can talk your ear off, but fucking, you know what I mean? Like, when you're talking about that stuff, I'm like, that was just a little bit, I'm like, just a little bit too young for that, I think.
Well, I'm 41 and I'm a little too young for it too.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, the fucking 28-year-old guy, it's like, Yeah, fucking, hey, were you there for like the fucking, you know, were you there for all that? I'm like, yo, dude, when all that was happening, like I either wasn't born or I was an infant. So like, no, I couldn't have made it to CBGB's if I wanted to. Right. I'm sorry.
I do think it's interesting.
I was still eating formula for fuck's sake. You know what I mean?
I mean, I don't know about you. I breastfed until I was 9. So I don't know if that's normal, right?
Yeah, that's pretty. I mean, I went until about. I mean, that's actually pretty early. I went until about like 17. Right. Pretty much around the time I got a girlfriend, my mom's like, you don't need to do this anymore. You can go to her. And I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. I can try this out.
Just make the switch. I do think it's interesting, though. Like, I've been thinking about this quite a bit recently, is just like how much fans' identities are wrapped up in the things that they consume and caring about things like that, like beef. And I'm not putting down the Cro-Mags. I mean, Cro-Mags are a great band, and I'm not laughing at
that's the thing. It's like I definitely understand that without them there wouldn't be, you know, they are like pioneers and shit like that. Like I get that. All I'm saying is I was just way too young to know any of that stuff. You know what I mean? Like I even, you know what I mean? Like it's like there's I wasn't alive, so I can't talk about it. But no, I agree. It's weird that that's sort of like that's such a thing. Like we even get it where it's like people will talk about like past members and be like, like I was watching, we had like a live video from the Dome in London. We like streamed the whole set. There's like people, like kids commenting, being like, oh, like I still miss Jesse. I'm like, why? Like he fucking, I'm like, he literally comes to the studio and writes the records with us still.
Right.
You miss like seeing him, like you miss the way his face looks. Like that doesn't make any fucking sense. Like who cares? You know what I mean?
You could put like, you could do like hologram Jesse, like they did with Tupac.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Just like fucking put a frame picture of him on Blake's fucking like guitar head. You know what I mean? And be like, oh, there you go. He's still here. It's like, and you know, and Jesse's like, fucking, he's probably like sitting at home and like he sees those comments. He's just like, why?
But
like,
I don't want to be there.
Yeah. He's like, I didn't like it. Like, I didn't have fun. I have fun writing. I don't have fun touring. So like, please don't make me go on tour again. I don't like that at all. And it's like, yeah, it's so weird that people get like, I don't know, people kind of get wrapped up in that. I mean, I guess I get it if it's like, you know, if let's say like, I mean, for Jesse, for example, it's like, he was like the primary songwriter of the band. So when he left, a lot of people were scared, understandably, you know, like, I mean, I would like, I like, think about me, like it's my fucking livelihood. Like I was scared. It's like, oh, suddenly the guy that like writes everything is quitting the band. And I'm just like, oh shit. Like, I guess I better go to college. You know what I mean? But
what you mean? University?
Yes. You can speak
Canadian here. It's okay. We understand.
Either or.
After grade 9, I went to university.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Well, I was going to go back for grade 13, do a victory lap, but I decided to go right to fucking Toronto Maple Leafs University in Maple Syrup, Ontario.
That kind of like emotional attachment is interesting to me. And like, on the one hand, I kind of roll my eyes at it. On the other hand, that's the same reason people care in the first place. And so I feel like it's kind of a double-edged sword. Yeah, I don't really have a great point about that. It's just something I've been thinking about lately, is kind of, you know, definitely, that dynamic of people caring a whole lot about this thing that they didn't make. And again, I'm not putting it down. I mean, I wouldn't be here if people didn't care about the things that I make. So I appreciate that they do.
Exactly.
I don't quite know what to make of it, you know, and especially, I totally understand when it's kids. Like when I was 13, I cared a lot about, you know, why the drummer of my favorite band isn't in the band anymore.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
When people are in their 30s, it's a little different. But yeah, I don't know. It's just interesting how much of our identity can be wrapped up in the things we consume, whether that's bands or clothing or, I mean, you know, any
like
of this
movies,
stuff.
You know, it's like fucking any, sports. I mean, I equate it to like, you know what I mean? Like, let's say like Jesse leaving the band and then Adrian replaces him and then Alex replaces Adrian shit. It's like people like people who are like love sports teams and shit. And they're like, oh, like my favorite team, like, oh, like that player got traded, like, fuck him. Like, how dare he? And it's like, yo, like if like, you know, at the end of the day, like, if somebody, I don't know, like I'm not made of stone. Someone fucking came up to me and was like, hey, you want to make like $60 million more and sing for this band? I'd probably be like, yeah, sure, I'm down. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not like, what the fuck? I've got, you know, I'm a normal human being. I got bills and shit.
Yeah.
I got expensive tastes that I got to keep up with.
That's right.
I've never thought about the reason why. I just usually, like I said, like you, like I see it, I kind of eye roll and I go, fuck, like I love that people care this much. But at the same time, I'm kind of just like, well, you know, pick pick your battles. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's different if, you know, it'd be different if like Jesse left and suddenly we were like a fucking
ska band or whatever.
Yeah. I was literally about to say ska band. Like we literally changed our sound so drastically that we became a ska band and people were like, I'm actually kind of pissed off about this. I'd be like, fair enough. That makes sense. But when we go from Tragedy to You're Not You, it's like, okay, so like Jesse left and then we put out like a better record than all the other ones. Like, you know what I mean? Like both him and Alex, like the original guitar players, were always around for writing and they still are. Like they're literally, Alex messaged me the other day. Like Alex is now back in the band and he was texting me the other day being like, yo, like Jesse randomly came over. We're like writing songs for the next record. And I'm like, please don't start that now. Like, I don't want to think about fucking writing lyrics for at least a couple years. Like Nothing Left to Love has been out for like 6 months. Like, can we give it time to chill before I have to fucking start doing other stuff again?
What makes you say that? Is it because it takes time or it's emotionally difficult or what?
Just because I'm lazy. That's straight up it. It's like, I wouldn't say that writing lyrics and stuff is, it's not emotionally difficult because I can kind of just like tap back into shit that I think I should write about and things that I think people want to hear about or things I need to get off my chest or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like we go to the studio, we're usually there for like a month, sometimes 5 weeks, whatever. And it's like the first, like, what, you know, vocals are always, they're like usually last. So it's like, you know, I kind of spend 2-3 weeks just like on my ass ordering like food and fucking, you know, like we'll crack some box wine or something and we'll go for ice. And I'm like literally just chilling, having fun. And then all of a sudden it's like the last 2 weeks, Will's like, we'll start tracking vocals tomorrow. Like, what do you got? And I'm like, oh, nothing. I'll start that right now, I guess. And then it's like, but, and I know like it's absolutely my fault. It's no one else's fault. Like it's just me procrastinating so bad that I wait to the last possible second. So I only have myself to blame, but definitely like when it's done, I'm just like, I'm so used to like fucking like dictionary.com, thesaurus.com, like looking up all this crazy shit. And it's just like, I don't even want to talk in like proper sentences anymore. I want to say like 2 words at a time and that's it. Like it's exhausting, but it is always like at the end of it, I mean, I'm definitely proud of it. I'm like, yeah, that rocks. Just like, don't ask me to be creative for a little while.
You'll probably like my new book, The Singer Who Was On Time and Other Tales of Whimsical Fantasy.
Yeah, exactly. The singer that helped load.
Right. That thought about somebody other than himself.
Yeah, crazy, right?
So on that note, I feel like, you know, you guys have been around for a while now, like 10 years or something, right?
I think like technically 13, but also like we didn't really fucking, we weren't like doing anything because we were literally in like grade 9 and 10 when we started. So it's like, obviously we couldn't like go on tour and shit. Maybe if my parents were to be like, yeah, drop out. Who fucking cares? Little rocker. Go fucking, you know, go ruin your life. But they didn't. Unfortunately, they made me finish high school. So we did that. But then we really started doing it like full on for like probably, it's probably been like, yeah, about 10 years. The first three was like, you know, playing fucking Waking the Cadaver covers as a joke at practice. Right. You know what I mean? Like just stupid shit like that.
So I feel like maybe in the last 3 years or something like that, I feel like the band got, or maybe even just last 2 years, like really got dramatically more popular. At least that's my perception of it. Or I certainly started hearing the name come up in a way that I didn't before. Do you agree with that? Or what are your thoughts?
I agree with you. And I always like that kind of always comes up where they're like, it's only really in the last couple of years that your name sort of carried weight for the first time in years, which.
And it's not like the music. I mean, the music was always good. I think the new stuff is better, but not like, it's not like, oh, they used to suck and now they're good.
Yeah. I think I honestly, the only explanation that I have that I think makes sense is like, is the fact that for whatever reason, I think we just kind of like, whether it was label management back in the day, like compared to now, I think that maybe it was just something along the lines of like, maybe we just had like the wrong people working for us, I guess, or we weren't on a label that actually had the capacity to like push us as hard, you know, or at least like, and I mean, like when you think about Victory, it's like, obviously they're a huge fucking label. Like they had some of the biggest bands in our world, even like outside of our world and like the alt world, you know, like Taking Back Sunday, Hawthorne Heights, like all that shit.
Are you going to be a priority is the question.
That was kind of it. It's like, you know, like I feel like maybe before we weren't necessarily like, maybe not that we weren't a priority, but I just think people didn't really know like where to sort of put us. You know what I mean? It's like, because we have that thing. It's like, we're in my mind, it's like, we're a metalcore band. We always have been, I guess. And it's like, talk about like Hellfest and all that shit. And it's like, I feel like back then, like if we would have had these songs and we would have been on like Trustkill or something, I think or Ferret or one of those, I feel like the band would have, it would have made more sense because those labels in themselves were like they were their own sort of like niche. They were their own sort of like universe and everything. It didn't really matter. It's like, okay, it's heavy and whatever, you know what I mean? Like, but I think that for whatever reason, like the earlier people, like the team that we had, they didn't really know where to like place us. It'd be like, you know, we would be doing either like, you know, weird, like weird tours that didn't make sense. Or we were doing like weird shit. Like I remember one time us and Close Your Eyes did like a fucking in-store signing like with Victory. And they were like, yeah, like you got to do an in-store. And I'm like, well, I don't really think anyone's going to show up. And they didn't. There was literally, and no word of a lie, two people came to the fucking FYE that we were at.
And it's not because people don't like your band. It's just, that's not your vibe.
Exactly. Like no one is going to be like, yeah, I'm going to go to the fucking mall and like say hi to Counterparts, like behind a table and take pictures and have them sign my shit. When it's like, you know, it's just, it's awkward. Like I feel like we're a little bit more.
Cause they could just go up and say hi to you at the next show.
Yeah. They'll like literally see me fucking at the bar, like buying a drink, and they'll be like, hey, Drinking Rocks. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And then, you know what I mean? And then we have a conversation and that's the end of it. But yeah, I feel like we didn't know and no one else really knew where to place us. And also just like, I think not that it's like a huge disadvantage or like handicap or by any means, but like being a Canadian band too, like kind of breaking into the States, it's almost like no matter how big you are in Canada, like if you haven't done the US, it's like, it's literally like, you're literally hitting a reset button. Like so many bands from our scene would like, you know, they'd be like worth almost 1,000 kids a night in Canada. And then they would go to the States and it's like, you know, we're talking like 100 kids if you're lucky. So a lot of bands were just like, fuck that. Like, why the hell would we ever do that? But
that's an interesting observation, which I've seen as well with a couple bands. Like Billy Talent is one that like,
sure.
If I hear from somebody, that's like a Billy Talent mega fan. That's like mad that I'm not giving them credit. I'm like, okay, you're Canadian, right?
Literally, it's like you're either Canadian or you're like super weird from the UK or something. Like that's even like on the same thing as like other bands. Like I'm trying to think of one, like a fucking huge band, like Tragically Hip and stuff like that. And like gigantic fucking real like radio Canadian bands. And it's like, I think that.
Is Bowling for Soup Canadian?
No, I don't think
They seem like they would be, don't they?
It's just goofy enough to where it's like, they can't be from America. Everything's crazy here.
Oh, they're from Texas. That's right. Yeah. The opposite of Canada.
Yeah. Almost polar opposites. But.
Close enough. Another band I've noticed that with is, I always forget how to say it right. Alexis on Fire.
Alexis on Fire. Yeah.
Which I guess is an actually like pretty mainstream artist in Canada. Not the case here.
No. Even back in the day, like, when they had more like screaming and shit like that, it was still like Much Music, like Canadian MTV type thing for anyone that wouldn't know that. It's like, you know, music videos like not on like the fucking late night punk rock fucking show, like literally just like on the Much Music countdown with like fucking all the other things. And like they would be like on the radio and stuff. Like obviously the more like radio friendly songs would be on. But yeah, I'm pretty sure like before they broke up, their like last show that they ever played was here, like in Hamilton. And it was at Cops Coliseum, which is like First Ontario Center now. And it's like, pretty sure there was like fucking like 10 and 20,000 people. God. You know what I mean? Like, it's like fucking insane. Or at least that's what the capacity of the venue is. I don't know if maybe they didn't.
But whatever. Like, sell the point whole thing being, up, but they're playing a hockey arena or whatever.
Yeah, like it's a hockey arena for like the Hamilton Bulldogs and shit. And it's like,
yeah,
like Rage Against the Machine was supposed to play there on their like reunion tour.
And they play
like,
to a tenth of that many people here.
Sure, yeah. And it's like, and it always.
And that's no fault against them. It's just proving your point. It's weird because Canada is like, I mean, we live here in Seattle and like we go up north. I was born in a city called Bellingham. I don't know if you've driven through there on tour or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
Pretty close. Like to me, BC is
2 hours.
Yeah. It's like, it feels like just an American state. It's the same distance as Oregon. So to me, BC feels like an American state because I've always grown up so close to the border.
Yeah. Totally.
And so it's strange to me that what you're saying is true. That it's like a parallel universe. And especially, I mean, you know, you're not far from the border either.
I can be in Buffalo in 45 minutes if I left right now.
So what is it that makes it so difficult for Canadian bands when it's so geographically close and culturally close?
like, I don't know exactly. I want to say, in my mind, I think one of the biggest issues is like the whole work visa shit, like how like American bands can come to Canada and you get like no Americans like don't need visas to play here, obviously, unless you're fucking, you know, unless you're like gigantic and making $1 million, then you probably need one. But even for us, like back in the day, we were getting paid $100, like $100 US a night, and we had to go and get work visas. So it's like at that point, you have to think like we literally just graduated high school. We all had like I worked part-time at a fucking grocery store and then like a Hot Topic once a week, like that type of shit. Like none of us had any money. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, like you got a couple $1,000s for your visas and you also have to pay for it every year. You know what I mean? And like all this stuff. And it's just,
I didn't realize that. So it doesn't work both ways.
No. It's like, yeah. Like for Americans coming in here, it's like, it's free. I think if you can prove that the venues are like just live music venues, as long as it's not like, you know, like if there was no show going on that day, like the venue wouldn't be open, like not like a regular.
What's up with your politicians for signing that bullshit deal? Sounds like they got bullied.
Straight up, probably. It was crazy. Like, you know, us like having to ask like our fucking parents for like a couple $100 each to like get these stupid visas. And then they're like, you know, then trying to explain like, oh yeah, so we're going to pay like $1,000 for this and we're going to come home in debt. And then not even have the $1,000. So it's like, it was such a crazy thing. And I think that for a lot of bands, like from Canada, they don't do that. And, you know, like it's like about the time that you're worth tickets in Canada, that's around the time where you're like, okay, let's try and do the States. But you're already like at a certain level in Canada where you're like, okay, I do this for a living. And like, I just go on tour in Canada. That's how I make my money.
Yeah.
And then someone tells you like, okay, fine. Like now pay money to go, just to be able to enter the US and work. And then also you're going to get $100 because you've never been here before. And most Canadian bands are just like, this is stupid. I would never. Yeah. Or on the flip side, your band just started. You're not worth dick in Canada and you're not worth dick in the States. And then on top of that, you have to come up with a couple $1,000 that you might never get back to go on tour and like try. So a lot of bands are just like, no fucking way. And then there's also the whole like Canadian radio, like,
oh, that's right. They have those like, those regulations about having to play a certain amount of Canadian artists.
Yeah, it has to be at least like 30% Canadian artists, I think, too. So that also helps when you're, you know, when you're like Alexis on Fire and you're getting played on like major radio stations here and your music videos are on TV, because a lot of the times I think the broadcasters are just like, fuck it, we got another Canadian band. Like, okay, there you go. Let's throw it on. And that's what also makes you big in Canada. And but then the drawback is no one in the US has heard of you. I don't know. It's crazy, but yeah. And like to me, I didn't even realize that. Like I remember being on fucking MySpace and like the first Alexis on Fire record is like, that's where we got our band name from. Like that's like one of my favorite records of all time. And fucking, I remember like talking to kids on like MySpace and shit and being like, oh, do you know Alexis on Fire? And people are like, what the fuck is that? And I'm like, how do you not know? Like they're so big, they're huge. And they're like, and everyone's like, I've never heard that name, period. And I'm just like, well, what the fuck? Like, how does this make sense?
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's so fucking weird. But I'm glad that for whatever reason, it like we were kind of at the point where it was like, we were worth dick in Canada and we were worth dick in the States. So we're just like, okay, let's just try and pick up some extra shifts and like go for it. And if we lose money, we lose money. Fuck it.
You know what? That's such a good way of putting it. Picking up extra shifts?
Yeah, straight up. Like me and our old bass player, Eric, like we used to work at this grocery store, Sobeys, together. And you know what I mean? Like there would just be times where we'd have to be like, hey, can we please like fucking work like 5 hours, like more a week that's $50. If I do that for a month, I've got my share of the visa thing. If you divide it by five, you know what I mean? Just
do what you got to do to make it happen.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're working in the salt mines or something.
No, that's it. Yeah. Like there's virtually like, I think the worst part about working at Sobeys was like when I had to put shit in the freezer and the gloves weren't thick enough. So my hands would get cold. You know what I mean? Right. It's like the end of the day, it's not like I'm going to work like on a fucking oil drill or whatever and risking my life every day to fucking play screaming music. It's like, nah, just put out a little bit of extra milk. You know what I mean?
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
So when you were coming over to the States in the beginning, were you booking that stuff DIY or did you have an agent or how did that work?
For the first little bit, we were kind of, I wouldn't say DIY in a sense, but the first two tours that we did, one was with It Prevails and one was with Shai Hulud. And we previously had toured with them in Canada. So it's like we did a tour. It was Shai Hulud, Lionheart, 100th and us in Canada. We became friends with, you know, 100th and Shai Hulud, Lionheart, like everybody. And then we did another tour in Canada with It Prevails and this band Cypher Stone Eyes from Halifax. And so we just kind of like kept in touch. And then, you know, it would be like fucking, you know, we became friends with Hulud and friends with It Prevails. And then when they said like, oh yeah, we want to like do a tour, like, or we're doing a US tour and we want you guys to open it. Like, we can't really offer much, $100 a night, but if you guys want to do it, and we'd be like, okay, sure. So we kind of had an in that way with like, you know, with like that sort of thing. And then after we did that for a little while, we had some like interest, like Bailey from like Gravemaker and shit. Like he used to book us for a minute and stuff like that. And we had some other people and like, yeah. And even still like back in that time, it was still MySpace and Facebook messages and yo,
right,
we're from fucking Rochester. Like let's do 5 days and like around, you know, upstate New York or whatever. And then you do like 5 Canada shows and we'll just trade off. And it's like, yeah, sure.
On that Shai Hulud thing, if you're making $100 a night, you're selling some merch, but you guys must've lost money on that.
Oh yeah. Like without question. I remember we were driving home and cause I think it ended somewhere fucking far. And I were like at least like a day and a half drive from where we were. And I remember like being at the gas station and like we had one of those like money bin things. And I remember like opening up the money bin and there was like fucking change. And I'm just like, and everyone else is kind of asleep. And I'm just like, we're out of fucking money. And I had to like pull out my wallet and like pay for gas out of my pocket on debit. And I'm like, okay, like I'll pay for this fill up. You get the next one, you get this one. And everyone, some of the guys in the band were like, I have zero money. Like, I don't even have money to eat. So I can't pay for gas. And I'm like, okay, we'll all just pay a little bit more. And that's how we like got home.
And you must have known beforehand that you were going to lose money on this.
Of course. Yeah.
So how do you make that decision of like, well, we're going to lose money on this tour, but it's worth doing anyway.
At that point, it was still, not that it's not fun now, but I guess like the idea of touring in general, like I remember the first tour we did with Their Prevails, like it started in Portland, I believe was the first show, or like Salem, Oregon or something like that. Some fucking venue. And it like went down to California and back up or whatever. And I remember all of us just kind of being like, yo, I've never like left fucking, I've been to Buffalo with my family maybe, but like we get to go to California, like this is crazy. And we get to play music. And, you know, we like loved It Prevails and Shai Hulud and all those bands. So it's like we get to go on tour with bands that we like look up to. And then, you know, after the conversation, it was like, hey, there's a possibility that we all might lose like a couple $100 if we do this, or maybe we'll break even, who knows, but like we're definitely not going to make any money. You guys still want to do this? And everyone was like, yeah, let's fucking go. And so we started touring and everything and started like doing that whole thing. And it just, and then I would say we did that for like fucking 5 or 6 years before we actually like made a dollar coming home. Like it was usually the same thing. It's like we'd get home and be like, well, we didn't lose anything, but there's 6 quarters in the money box. Right. So, you know, everyone gets a quarter and then the band gets to keep 25 cents. You know what I mean? Stupid shit like that. It's like at that point we were all 18 years old, 19. Like I remember like a lot of the venues we were playing, like they would barely even like let us in to play because we weren't 21 and shit like that. So it's like, yeah, like crazy shit. So we did that forever. And it was just like, you know, when you're 18, you're like, yeah, this sounds fucking sick. Like I'm in. But obviously now I wouldn't, you know, like now there's like not really any tour that could come up aside from like legendary bands where it would be like, yeah, you're not going to make any money, but like it'll be sick. Like there's not many bands that I would tour with now and be like, okay, because I have to, you know, I have to eat and fucking feed myself and shit now.
So back then, you started doing the band kind of for real. And for the first 5 years or whatever of that for real period, you're essentially making almost no money off the band, all working side jobs.
Yeah, and totally.
Did you believe that at some point you would be able to make it your full-time thing, or you didn't really think too much about it, or what was your plan there?
Honestly, it's like, I think I was so like irresponsible back then that I just didn't really care. You know what I mean? Like obviously now it's like, I'm 28. I got a fucking, you know, it's like I've got bills and shit like that. And so everything's kind of, you know, even before we leave for a tour, I'm like doing things being like, okay, if we're getting paid this much and we make this much in merch and our bills are this and we owe the manager that and all this shit, like I'll probably come home with this much money. Okay, let's go. But back then it's just like, you know, we were all living with our parents. We'd all just graduated and we were like, yeah, fuck it. If it works, it works. Like, I just want to have fun. We were so young that it was like, you know, yeah, so what? Like college is always going to be there. Like we're fucking, yeah, if this doesn't work, like I'll go to college at 21. Like, who gives a shit? But, you know, for some reason, we just like kept fucking doing it. And then inevitably, I have to like learn how to run a business in a sense and like make smart decisions and shit like that. So it's like, I don't know. It all of a sudden one day it was like, I remember the first time we did a tour, we did like it was a Canadian headliner. I think it was like 2012, 2013 or something. And we did it was like Cross Canada. And it was with Your Demise, 100th, and Gideon, and like our like a headline tour for us. And we did that. And I remember that was the first time we came home. And I was like, oh my God, like we can all get paid like $1,000. Like everyone gets $1,000. Like this is fucking insane. At that point, that was like the most money I had ever had, like at one time, was like the money I just got. And I was like, holy shit. And it was that was like sort of the first time where I was like, okay, like this makes sense. And then I started thinking about it and being like, okay, well, if we do this differently, or like maybe we do this, or like, you know, work on a deal with this merch company or fucking all this other stuff, like then we would have had more. Then maybe it would have been like $2,000. You know what I mean? And then I started like going through that in my head and being like, okay, I think there's like money to be made here.
So do you enjoy that part of it? Like kind of optimizing the business part of it? Or what do you feel about that?
Honestly, not so much, because I think I struggle a lot with like that, you know, is this good for like the brand and good for business if I do this, versus like Well, it's fucking so stupid, and it's dumb as shit, but like, I want to just fucking do it. Like, we've done shit where it's like, you know, we've printed shirts that literally, like, we made them bad on purpose.
Yeah.
And we wrote, "This shirt fucking sucks," like, really small on it. Like, we've done that stuff before in the past, and I'm always like, this is so fucking dumb. Like, stuff that...
But I feel like that's a big part of why people like the band, because
I agree.
Yeah, like, your genre is... Like, you in particular, I don't know anybody else in the band, so I don't know if they're all like you, but, you know...
Pretty much.
Yeah. So your personality is such a, I guess, refreshing counterpoint to how serious the genre is.
For sure.
And I know people like that. I've heard people mention, like, that the reason they like the band is because you're funny on Twitter.
Sure. And like, I mean, to me, that's like the sickest thing that anyone, like, we know when people come up and they're like, yeah, I never heard your band before, but you made me laugh on the internet, so... I like checked it out and you guys rock. So I'm like, that's two compliments for one. Thank you. Like, oh my God, I'm going to blush.
So I checked out your band. It's terrible, but I still follow you on Twitter.
But you're funny. Even if someone said that, if they were like, yeah, I listen to Counterparts, I don't really like it, but like, you're funny as shit, I'd be like, hey, that's still fine. Hey, fine by me. That's still fucking, I'm still getting something. I'm getting some sort of validation out of you at the very least.
So my question would be, people have asked me this, and you would be more qualified to answer it than I am. I think everyone still kind of operates under the mindset of, if you're in a new band and you want to build your name, to do it the way that you did 10 years ago, to like eat shit, doing all these small tours, play nowhere, and then play a little bit more, blah, blah, blah. On the other hand, to me, kind of seems like there's an opportunity to kind of skip the line if you are good at making content, as you saw with bands like I Prevail, you know, 5 years ago, blowing up off a YouTube cover and stuff. What are your thoughts about that? Like, if you were starting out now, what would you do differently, if anything?
In terms of us, I feel like that world, like, I think that if you were in like a band that was heavy at all, like, you kind of had to rough it, unless there was like, you know, it was commercial enough to where it was like, you got like a good manager, like some label, here's your demos, and they're like, yeah, I'm down, like, let's make this band the biggest band in the world, then obviously you have the shortcut. But I think for the most part, in terms of like metalcore, hardcore, like, you know, any like all of that kind of stuff, it's like you kind of just had to do that. So like, because of that, I think that I wouldn't really know what I could do, you know what I mean? Like thinking about, like you said, like a band like I Prevail or something, like doing a YouTube cover, that would have never have crossed our mind. Cause it's like, oh yeah, we're going to get big off of like covering a fucking song. Like that's like, there's no way. That's crazy.
That doesn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah. But now it is such a real thing. And I even see it with like a band that we just toured with in the UK. They're called Static Dress. They're like a UK band. They're like young kids. Like on the tour that we did, like we just did, we would give them, their set time was like, we gave them 30 minutes and they were like, oh, we can't fill it. Like we literally have only written like seven
songs. I
love that. We can only play for 20 minutes. And so it's like the music kicks fucking ass, but it goes back to what you were saying about like their like content aspect of the band is like so fucking smart, and the way they do everything. And it's like, they've got like every single photo, like they take photos for like everything. Like they'll fucking get like a printout of the flyer and like hang it on a fucking wall or something and take a photo of it and then run it through the filter, that like the Static Dress filter, and post it. And then it's like they won't just put up like a fucking, JPEG of an ad mat. It's like, it has to be like that. And I think that, you know, and even just from like being on that tour and seeing the way they operate and like hearing about shit that they have coming up and, you know, who's going to manage them and these labels they're talking to, I'm like, this band's going to be fucking huge. Like they're going to be massive. And it's like, if somebody would have told me that fucking 13 years ago, I'd be like, you think that we're going to get bigger if we take pretty fucking pictures? Like, what kind of music do you think we play? But it's just, it's like, that is such a reality now. And it's like crazy. So, you know, maybe like my way of like running the band and sort of like my personality and shit like that, it's not that I'm like rebelling against it, but it's just like, I don't know, for whatever reason, it was like so different for me coming up. So it was like, you know, I have no choice but to be a polar opposite. Like, whereas other bands are, you know, other bands are like fucking, yeah, like, I don't know, they're like fucking, oh, we love you guys, whatever. And I'm like on stage being like, thanks for the fucking money, you dumbass. And like, and right. It's like, obviously I'm joking, but you know, just weird shit. Like, I don't know. I feel like the stuff that we do now, if there were bands like, and they would do what we do now, like their managers would email them and be like, hey, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, what do you think you're doing? Like, you're going to like, oh, you, do you want to play music for a living or you want to fucking work at Sobeys? You know what right. I mean? But for whatever reason, it, I don't know, I guess I just like drove it home hard enough to where people are like, okay, this is just how they are now. I should, cause I remember like 2009, 2010, like I've always been like this. Like I've never taken anything like super serious. I've always like made jokes, done the sarcastic thing. Like that's just been me. And I remember when we started doing that back in the day, people fucking hated us. Like I would just say stupid shit like that. Like if we had like a fucking show cancel or something, or like, you know, I would be honest and I'd be like, yeah, like I'd be like, yeah, we're not playing here because it's fucking dangerous. Like I'm not gonna like put myself at risk to fucking play to three kids. Like, sorry. Yeah. And people would be like, well, you should be thankful that there are even three kids that would come see you and stuff. And I would more or less just respond back with like, kiss my ass. And right. then over time, like people started to just like love it. And then, you know, now to where it's like, if someone like tries to beef us on the internet, like I don't even have to do anything. Like people, like kids just fucking just take it over for me. And right. I'm like, okay, like send the minions out to do my fucking bidding. You know what I mean? But it's yeah. like, it's so funny because now that's just widely accepted for us. But back in the day, it was like fucking, I like, yeah, we would post shit like that and people would be like, how fucking dare you? Like you, like they don't, I saw Counterparts and the singer was making jokes on stage. Like, oh, I lost all respect for this band. And I'm just like, who the fuck are you? Like, kiss my ass. Like, what the fuck? Like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, you know, like just weird shit like that. But yeah, the whole, I don't know. It's like, I feel bad. Cause like bands will always kind of ask me like, younger bands and shit, they'll be like, how did you do this? Like, how did you get a manager or like booking agent or whatever? How'd you do this? And it's like, that was literally so long ago and I'm so fucking dumb. I don't know how it happened. It just happened. Like one day it was like some guy emailed me and said like, I'll do it. And I'm like, okay, you're fucking hired. Let's go. And then, you know, that's how just everything came into place. But so weird.
Well, you know, there's something to be said for being that irresponsible 19-year-old that's willing to just take a fucking flyer on something, you know, and sometimes it backfires, lots of times it does. But then on the other hand, I think about a lot of things I did that led me to where I am today, that if I didn't do something stupid and irresponsible when I was 19, it would have never happened.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Like that's, you know, that's like literally, like if you put it into any other context, like touring and like you leave out the part about playing music and you were just like, hey, so here's what you're going to do. You're going to like quit your job where you make money now. You're going to live in a van. You're going to make no money and you might not be able to eat, but like maybe.
You'd be able to eat something, probably not as much as you want, but.
Yeah, maybe you'll get something. I don't know. And then maybe in 10 years you'll make money. You want to give it a shot? Like most people would be like, are you fucking insane? Like, why would anyone ever do that? That's torture. But then.
But you get to carry a guitar for 25 minutes a day. Oh, all right. Well, in that case, I'm in.
You get to play screaming music, and then suddenly everyone's like, fuck yeah, let's
sign
go.
Me
and
up.
I'm like, what?
You could have tens of fans in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah, straight up. Like, hey, maybe one of them could maybe, they might be able to get you into Disney as long as there's not a blackout date. You know what I mean? Like, it's so like crazy to think of. But that being said, I guess I do wish that we had all these like things back in the day, like, you know, like fucking Instagram and fucking even like TikTok and like other ways to like SoundCloud, like all that shit, like ways to actually push your music. I don't think I would change it. I'm stoked at how we did everything. And like, it did take a long time and we're still not, like, going back to what you said earlier, like with us getting bigger and like our name sort of carrying a little bit more weight and stuff. It's like not in like an egotistical sense. Like I still feel like we're always going to be that like underdog band. Like I feel like if we were going to have that moment of fucking blow up, now they're huge, like that would have happened forever ago. Yeah. So now, you know, like we see it, it's like we took like Knock Loose on our first headliner and it's like they in what, 2 years time or some shit, maybe a little longer, like they're literally like five times the size of us. Like they can, like whatever we draw in a headliner, like they can get maybe not five, but like at least double or more than what we would get in terms of crowd. And it's like, it's so easy to sort of like see that and kind of be like, well, fuck, like when's it going to happen for us? But I've sort of shifted my thinking now to being like, well, I just don't think we're that type of, I think we've just been a band for too long that it's not necessarily exciting. Like we're not like a new exciting band anymore. Right. So you have to sort of like step back and be like, okay, now the only thing that we can hope for is like just having like staying power and being able to be relevant across decades, like bands like Every Time I Die and Senses Fail and Silverstein and Hawthorne Heights and like bands that have just been fucking doing it forever, to where it's like, you know, like you can do it into your fucking 40s. You know what I mean? Like you can do that. It's just a matter of staying relevant and like being on the ball. And that's sort of like what I'm, that's my new focus. It's like, we're never going to have our like big pop where it's like, oh, we put out Nothing Left to Love and now we're worth 1,000 kids a night. It's like, now we'll just like keep doing this until we've like carved a little area out for ourselves where we can like go on tour and get between 500 and 1,000 kids everywhere. And it's like, yeah, it might not be exciting. We might not be the most talked about band, but it's like, I'm still fucking paying my bills and playing music.
If you can get between 500 and 1,000 human beings to show up and watch you in any given city.
Sure.
That's no fucking joke.
Yeah, straight up.
And if you can do that for years and years and years, like,
yeah, you're set.
Yeah, to me, like, I think of Silverstein as such a perfect example of that. Is like, I remember when they came out and they would play like the Bloomfield Avenue Cafe down the street from my house in New Jersey to like 15 people, and I kind of forgot that they existed until like a couple years ago, because I didn't really like them at the time, you know, when they came out, and I it's probably not their favorite album of theirs either. And then I realized that they were still around, and I was like, they're still around and they're this big now? What?
Yeah. Like, yeah, totally.
And to me, that's the models. Like, you just keep slowly building, and they'll be able, they could play music into their 60s if they want to.
Yeah, straight up. So it's like, to me, that's sort of like, okay, you know, having like a heyday, or like, not necessarily like a peak or whatever, but it's like, you know, when you have that like boom in a sense of popularity, it's like, it's scary. Cause you're like, fuck, like, will this stick around forever? Like, what are we going to do? You know, what if it tapers off? Like, then what are we just done? Sure. And like, more often than not, it will. So I think it's like, what I think a lot of bands out there now are trying to replicate that, like that insane, like surge and like that blow up and shit like that. And it's like, honestly, it's like, yeah, don't get me wrong. Like if there was a way or something that I could have done to make my band like twice the fucking size it is now, I'd probably do it. You know, I mean, there is, but I'm not going to fucking, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to put out like a fucking butt rock record and start singing shit like that. Like, that'll never happen for me.
And the thing is, I don't even think that would work. It would probably destroy your band.
Yeah. Now, given the way, like, given our relationship with our fans, like, I think that if we put that out, like, they would all just be like, hey, this sucks.
This is terrible. What are you doing?
Yeah, like, what? Like, why did you do this? Like, you dumb motherfucker. Like, we loved you, and now you're fucking, now I don't want to hear your band ever again. But, you know, so that being said, I would probably never do it. But I would, like, I'll always be slightly envious of bands that have kind of, you know, they've like blown up and shit, or like, you know, it's like, oh, they've been a band for a couple years, but they're already huge. And it's like, honestly, thinking about that, like, now I'm like, especially given everything that's like happening with like the fucking, you know, everything getting canceled or postponed and all that shit, I'm like, you know what? At least like, I'm like, that just kind of went out of my mind, and being like, fuck, like, how are we going to get bigger with the next record and shit? Now I'm just like, how are we going to stay the same? You know, how do we get like just a little bit more kids to the shows every time we do an album? Because then, like you said, if we can keep doing this, and it's like, you know, if our guarantee keeps going up and we get older and it's like the same amount of kids are showing up, it's like, that's fine by me. Like, I don't fucking care. I can do this for years and years. But obviously, that being said, if we did a tour and fucking nobody showed up, I'd probably be like, all right, we're done. Time to can this.
What would you have to see to make that decision? I mean, is it one bad tour? Is it five bad tours? Like, what would that signal be to you?
I would say like a year of bad touring, that might do it for me. So I'll give you an example. Like the tour that we just did in the States, like the last headliner, like the Private Room 2.0. So it's like, a lot of the rooms that we played on that tour were just too big. And it's like maybe not too big for Counterparts, but too big in terms of like, we were expecting a lot more than what we got. But that's the problem, is like, I don't think it was like Nothing Left to Love, like people didn't like the new record, because obviously like those songs are like the biggest songs of our set now. Like, they go harder than like the Disconnect. Usually it was the best selling, like best record that we've put out in terms of like numbers and shit like that, like highest debut, like all that shit. So it's like, it wasn't that. And then we kind of like look back on it and go like, damn, do you think it has to do with the fact that that was our third fucking US tour in like 1 year? Like, yeah. do you think maybe if we didn't do the Pure Noise tour fucking 2 months before we did the headliner, we might be able to fill these rooms? And it's like, oh yeah, probably. So like we were literally playing like the same rooms as the Pure Noise tour. And it was the same, like the same areas. It's like that tour ended in fucking California, like when we played Observatory or Chain or whatever. And then 2 months later, we were at 1720 again in LA. And it's like, there was like, I think 300, 400 people, which is like, not like, that's not bad, but the venue's like 800 cap. Right. So it's like kind of embarrassing when the room's fucking half full, but then you just have to be smart and think like, okay, maybe we just don't fucking do three US tours in 1 year.
How did that happen then? How do you end up playing those same rooms 2 months later? Just the tours were booked separately and nobody noticed it, or how does that happen?
So we got the Pure Noise offer, and on that tour, we were like smashing, like we were doing fucking great. So we had been sort of booking a lot of the venues like around the same time, like kind of like with promoters knowing like, okay, yeah, I've got Counterparts as direct to stick to your guns on this tour. And then fucking 2-3 months later, I shouldn't say like 2 or 3 months, it's like some of them lined up, like the California dates lined up to where it was 2 or 3 months. But take for example, like Pure Noise, we played, I can't remember the name of the venue, but it's in Brooklyn. And then it was like almost 3 months later, we played New York City on our tour, and it was like the same amount of people. And like, we played Gramercy, it sold out. Like, so then at that point, it doesn't really affect it, but it was just the fact that the Pure Noise tour ended in like Southern California, and then our tour starts in Southern California. Like, we should have flipped it. You know what I mean? Right. Like, we should have started on the opposite side and made our way out.
Well, sorry, I don't mean to belabor this point. I'm just genuinely curious. I know routing tours is hard and there's a lot of people involved. I'm just curious, like, how does that not get noticed? I'm not trying to like beat you up. Just curious.
Not at all. I think it was conscious to where it was like, okay, like maybe not that we could like sell out, like let's say 1720, for example, like 800 cap. It's like, I definitely don't think like our manager and like our booking agent were sitting there being like, yeah, so like Stick to Your Guns, Counterparts, Terror, fucking Sanction, and Year of the Knife sells out 1720. So that means Counterparts alone can probably sell at 1720. But they were probably like, well, it'll probably do like a little bit more than the 500 cap venue they normally play. Right, so let's just do it in there like that, you know, that type of shit.
Just one of those sort of educated guesses that goes into all these things. And sometimes you get them right and sometimes you get them wrong.
Exactly.
Like merch inventory happens all the time. You get sizes wrong and shit like that all the time. Even though you've printed a million fucking shirts, when you're going, how many mediums should we get? And you still get it wrong.
Sure. Or like even something, you know, where it's like, you know, like when we did Japan for like for years, and it'd be like, oh yeah, like it's like, well, yeah, I mean, like people in Japan don't really buy like 2XL. So like, we don't need to print any of those. Like that's like maybe like a couple just in case. And then we go over there and we like start a tour, and we're like, and then, you know, kids that are like smaller than me are coming up being like, you have 2X. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm like, I wear an XL and you're a fucking small. And they're like 2X. And I'm like, oh fuck, like we fucked up this time.
The reason I'm asking is because I think there's a lot of armchair quarterbacking that goes on in business where people are like, well, they should have done blah, blah, blah. But if you were sitting at the table when that decision was made, you probably would have made the same decision.
Of course.
Of course, it's easy to say in hindsight, well, why didn't you print more 2XLs? Everyone knows that Japanese kids like 2XLs now. And you're like, well, now I know that.
For sure. And it might be similar in terms of like every type of business. But I mean, I can say for a fact in terms of like like, you know, with music and like touring and shit like that, it's like, you're always going to fuck up. Like there's literally no fucking band that like, you know, they like do enough math and they're like, okay, I think we've got it figured out. This is what we're going to print. And then, you know, the last kid in line comes up and goes, right, can I have that one in medium? And you're like, that's the last shirt we have. And boom, then it's like, cool. Yeah. Everything's gone. There's no mistakes. There's no bills. It's just fucking like, that just never, you know, it'll never happen. I mean, unless you got like some fucking crazy genius doing shit.
But that's just luck, because think about movies, for example. How many movies with an all-star cast and a huge marketing budget and all the right people on the team flop?
they fucking bomb.
Do you think it's because everyone involved with that movie is stupid? Or maybe it's just that it's really fucking hard to know how things are going to come out.
Of course, of course. And then you also have to factor in like fucking everything.
The weather matters, or if there was a terrorist attack on the other side of the planet, and now people are scared to go to venues or theaters.
Yeah, there's a pandemic right now. It's like the fucking coronavirus matters. Yeah. It's like even that is like fucking, you can't predict that shit. So like sometimes it just doesn't happen. And I think that, so now, you know what I mean? I'm like, I don't get bummed out either way. I'm kind of just like, you know, if it's like, yeah, we got like a lot of merch left, like the UK tour we did, it's like we were doing, the tour started, or it was a Europe tour, like, but the, it was only the first four dates were in like mainland Europe, like Germany, fucking like Amsterdam, like that type of shit. So those shows, it's like, we normally can't draw like a fucking picture in Europe. Like people just never fucked with us. And now all of a sudden they do. So we were like burning through shit and we were like, oh my fucking God, like this is insane. Like we're out of everything. Like we're going to be in the UK in 4 days. And like, yeah, that's where people actually, that like people there like us more and we sell more merch. So we ordered so much shit. And then at the end of the tour, it's like, oh fuck. Like actually, like we did, like there was not a single night in the UK where we did better than our merch numbers in mainland now. So it's like if you told me that before the tour, I'd be like, you're full of it. There's no fucking way. Like that's not how our band works. And then lo and behold, you like go and do it. And suddenly you're like, I'm fucking wrong again. Like you're always going to be, I mean, I guess I should, not always, but I'm always going to be fucking wrong about something.
Yeah. I mean, for example, for our company, for anybody who's listening, who's not familiar with it. So what we do is we have like producers on every month and you get the multi-track files for the album. And it's very hard to know how well any given producer and artist is going to do. For example, like there's no real correlation between how big the artist is and how well it does for us, which we found out the hard way. For example, like we had Papa Roach on, who are huge. People might not understand this, but they sell a fucking massive amount of tickets and records, and our audience just didn't respond. It didn't, that month did not do well. On the other hand, we had a band on called Carnivool. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. I had not really.
Yeah, I've heard the name. I think North Lane like love that band.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
That's all I know about them.
Exactly, they're that kind of band, and they crushed. They did like probably four times better for us than Papa Roach did. Even though, to use your word, in the U.S., Carnivool could not draw a picture outside of probably like New York City or something. So my point being is, for anybody who's listening, demand forecasting, which is the, you know, jargon term for this, is hard as fuck. It's hard.
Yeah. And it's just, and it's the harder you try to pinpoint it, like just the more frustrating it is and the more disappointed you get. So it's, yep, like at the end of the day, like just fucking try your best. You know what I mean? Like we on the Private Room tour, like that fucking hoodie that we have, like the Nothing Left to Love hoodie. Like I like it. I think it's cool, but at the end of the day, it's like, it's a black hoodie with white text with a yellow border. Like it literally, it's like the Hamilton Tiger Cats like, yeah, font. I like have a hat that I like was my grandfather's, and I like sent a picture of it to Trey, our like art director guy. And I'm like, yeah, let's just rip this. Like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And every fucking day we would go to UPS, we would get boxes and boxes of them. And then at the end of the night, fucking gone, like just sold out completely. And I'm just like, you have no idea. I'm like, you like the sweater with the fucking word, like with like aerial narrow bold fucking whatever on it. Like that's what you like. That's the hot ticket item.
Right.
And now it's like, if you just go into it thinking that you're going to bomb, then at least you'll be happy when you don't, you know what I mean? That's sort of how I see it.
You know, you're being humble about it, but I think, you know, we all make educated guesses, but I think you just have to, the moment you get fucked up is when you think that you can forecast it, because you can't, because nobody can. And anybody who does this for a living will tell you that you can't fucking forecast these things.
Exactly. It's like whenever you start to take your own fucking guess as like, this is what's going to happen, you're fucked. You know what I mean? Like you'll never, you can have an idea. You know, if we put out a record that like is fucking slamming and we're like, everyone loves it, I'd be like, we absolutely kill it. I'd be like, yeah, maybe we could try and play some bigger rooms or have a little bit more merch on hand or whatever. But I don't know. You can't be mad if something happens. It's like,
you just never know.
Yeah. You have no fucking idea, but that's always going to be something that we, I guess, like struggle with in a sense. But yeah, there's no sense like beating yourself up over it. It's like, it's fucking, at the end of the day, it's fucking shirts. Like they'll, you know, to go back to your original question about like what it would take. I think like given that tour happening and it was like, we all kind of everyone on board, it's like, okay, we had like done the record. We knew it. Like we were like, yeah, this fucking rocks. It's better than You're Not You. And You're Not You took us from here to here. And, you know, so naturally it should be bigger than the last one. But then there's just a lot of factors, like maybe having bands that were on the first Private Room, you know, maybe like in my mind, I'm like, yeah, we're going to bring Varials again because like I love them and they're like some of our best friends and they're doing like they're fucking smashing. They're doing very well. I'm like, how could this fail? But then there are just some kids that see the lineup and go, I already saw that show.
Yeah.
Like I already paid fucking $20 for that last year. Like, why would I go see it again? Like maybe get a little diverse with it. And I'm just like, fuck. It's like you almost can't win. It's like if you do something crazy, like when we like the first one where it was like, okay, we got us, Being as an Ocean, Have Mercy, Varials. It's like no one sounds the same.
Yeah.
And the kids are like, this is awesome. And then some kids are like, this is fucking weird. Like, I don't get why Have Mercy's on this or something. But then when you do a tour where it's like all heavier bands, even though they're like different types of heavy, like then kids go, this is all the same. It's like you can't win. So you kind of just gotta fucking you just gotta like at the end of the day, you just gotta go for it and try.
Yeah,
you gotta gamble a little bit. Gambling fucking rocks. I love it. It's winning money is the most fun you can ever have. So try and win some fucking fans, I guess.
All right. Well, that sounds like a good note to end it on. Taking up or down for your time. One thing, speaking of Varials, in case anybody in the band is listening, they didn't think it was funny that I called them Varial Spa. And so
Varial Spa, like yeah. Their fucking thing, like Varials PA. That yeah. is funny.
I guess they didn't think it was funny. So guys, I apologize. Just a joke.
Who the fuck? I'm going to message him after this and be like, yo.
Maybe I'm wrong. That's what somebody told me. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. If they were offended, it's just a joke. I'm a fan. Great band.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely don't. I don't think that they were like sitting around and it was like, oh, Varial Spa. And they were like, that's the most fucking offensive thing I've ever heard. Or on the flip side, like,
I admit that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they were like Varial Spa. Like, oh, fuck, he got us. But it's like, it's funny enough to like giggle at, like, that's just fucking funny. Like, who cares? You know what I mean? Like, but hey, whatever.
All right. Well, thanks for doing this. I was going to ask you if you have anything to plug, but we don't know what's going to go on with tours. So do you have anything else?
I mean, the end record, the end full length is going to come out eventually. But even then, like, Will fucking called me today and was like, I don't know when the fuck this is. Like, we don't even know if we're going to be able to get fucking vinyl printed in time because the fucking plants might be shut down because they don't want people to go to work. So I don't know. It's done. It'll come out. I don't fucking know when. I hope it's soon, but we'll see.
Well, go listen to the old one for now. Get ready for the new one. Go listen to some Counterparts song. Just stream the shit out of every Counterparts song you possibly can on every platform.
Yeah, let me get my SoCan money. Let's go. Right. I live for that. Every now and then I get a couple $100, go to the casino and might make more. So maybe this time I'll actually use it for good because I can't leave the fucking house. So.
All right. Well, thank you again for being on and I'll see you next time you come to Seattle.
Of course. Take care.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home, think about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo, and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that, you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that, has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe Grind Podcast.